driven towards closing a gap between agriculture and food, and between food and health, and ultimately between agriculture and health. I think those industries are so interconnected that we could do a better job at connecting those with, maybe it's technology, maybe it's conversation, maybe it's events. You know, I think those three for me, the world is always going to need to eat. And, you know, we've heard the projections on what we have to grow by 2050. I'm not here to repeat that. But I actually don't believe we do have to grow that much more by 2050. I think we've got to grow and distribute more evenly our capabilities here.
Welcome to the Growing the Future podcast, where our future is always bigger than our past. Brought to you by Eberhardt Ag Solutions. In season 2, episode 9, Terry and Holden Eberhardt speak with Warren Bills about connecting food and health and agriculture in the context of the COVID crisis 2020. Enjoy.
Alrighty, so here we are with another podcast of Growing the Future podcast. I'm excited today to have a good bud and old friend and comrade Warren Bills with us, and as always Holden as well. And so it's I guess it's April Easter weekend here. I'm not sure when this podcast is going to air, but we're kind of living in a new world order now, so to speak, and quite a few things have changed. But anyways, pretty excited just to have a bit of a fun chat today with Warren and Holden and see where things are at. So Warren, why don't you just kind of give us a little introduction and tell us about what's going on in your life at the moment.
Awesome. Thanks, Terry. Nice to be on here with you and Holden. I'm not that old. You're older than me. So, but nice to know that we can go back and I think have a good conversation here based on where we've come from. And a little bit about myself. I'm currently just sitting in my home east of Calgary in a small town called Langdon, where I live with my wife and my four kids. I've been working in the agriculture business for quite some time, I guess, and it's particularly geared towards technology, and happy to bring some thoughts and ideas towards the Growing in the Future podcast today. So thanks for having me on.
Awesome. Yeah, so I'm super excited. We've been thinking about having you on for a while, and I guess Warren and I go ways back. Yeah, you're not that old, Warren. I guess I'm not that old either. But, you know, we first kind of got connected in the early days of AgriTrend, of course, and that was a pretty special place, and did a lot of really cool stuff and with a lot of cool people. It was an amazing culture, and we became really, really close partners in business. But more importantly, I think we established some really cool and strong friendships and bonds with the family. I think that's kind of one of the things that I'm excited to chat about a little bit now. So Holden, where are you at there now? One of the things I think that we're going to talk about today is a little bit of, obviously we're living through kind of the peak of COVID-19, something that definitely weren't necessarily expecting, but it's affecting us all in lots of different ways. And I guess, yeah, for you, Holden, what's your world like, or what's changed with you?
Well, it's a lot different not going to school, because for me, I always thought, oh man, I have to go to school. But now, like, not doing it, I realized that it's a lot different not seeing anybody and not visiting your friends. And it feels like you just get, like, cut off, like, completely. But, I mean, it's not that bad because, like, we live on a farm, so we can kind of, like, go outside pretty much. Doesn't really matter because we're not going to be interacting with people. So, yeah, it's pretty much it.
For sure.
It's interesting, Holden, because you're seeing both the pros and the cons. I think even us adults are seeing the same pros and cons, depending on the lens we look through it. And I think we just actually came back. Our family just went for a drive this afternoon, and we delivered cupcakes with Easter treats on them and for the kids, and then bottles of wine for the adults. And we visited five families, a couple in the country. And yeah, we got there and we just felt like they had all this opportunity in the country. And then, you know, we went to the city as well and some friends there, and felt for them because they really were kind of in their house. They couldn't go outside of their house because there's just too many people, but that is the reality. But there's always blessings in disguise, I think, in these times. So good on you.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, one of the things we were thinking about, and I mean, obviously, Warren, you got a young family there and quite a few critters running around the house as well. And I guess just kind of curious, you know, maybe describe to us a bit your kids and how life has changed for you guys in your life since all this has happened.
Now, so we have four kids. They're all under the age of six and under. So we have twin girls that are six and a boy who's four and another girl who's two. And so the six-year-olds are in grade one. And, you know, I think the blessing there is that they're both in the same grade for us. So as parents managing the homeschool, it's actually not so bad. It's also at a I can still get by on grade one. If it was grade 10, or maybe I should say like six, it'd be a little different. So I don't know how your parents are doing their holding, but anyways, for us, we're actually doing okay. You know, for me personally, I have had home office before, and so I've been able to adjust physically and also mentally, just kind of back into this home office that I'm sitting in. My wife Rebecca also works 3 days a week for the government, and so she's working. I think that's probably our hardest thing right now, is just, you know, it's difficult to work an hour then be, you know, working another hour with the kids and just flip-flopping topics. And it's easier just to, you know, I think, stay focused. So yeah, nonetheless, you know what, we're honestly taking this really seriously. It's important. It's an important period of our lives to be following these isolation rules, not maybe for ourselves, but for the people that are at higher risk. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to reflect back on this period and see how this has maybe shaped some new habits for our family. I think that's going to happen. I think it's going to, you know, even shape sort of new spending habits. I think will be shaped in a good way. You know, we're spending a lot less. Actually, I would say we've probably spent $1,500 less per month. You know, based on, we're just not burning as much fuel, not eating out as much.
Wow.
That's huge. That's huge. For a family like ours. So yeah, those are some little insights, I guess, into our home, but, yeah.
Well, we haven't,
what about you, Terry?
I've been thinking that, you know, our budget would probably be down yet, but we haven't, found enough time in isolation to look at that. That's, maybe coming next week, but yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of stuff different and you know, some of it could be a challenge, but I guess for me personally, I've been really enjoying, with six kids in our family now and everything going on and the travel schedules and just generally the world that we were living prior to COVID-19 was, had things going on. Like even all the kids had 2, 3, 4 things going on to attend to, and all of a sudden all that ends essentially, and we're still incredibly busy. We're very lucky. I mean, there is quite a few of us, so we don't get too lonely. There's lots to do out in the farm, and we kind of have the lake to retreat to on the weekends, which is where we're right here right now. But yeah, I think the biggest things is just really kind of focusing back on the basic stuff, just spending time with each other. I've probably had some of the most enjoyable weekends the last 3 weekends, knowing that there's nothing to plan, nowhere to go. There's no birthday parties. There's no ski hill. There's no sports or running around, because usually we're running in 2 or 3 directions every day. And I think I've been really enjoying that. I've been really enjoying not worrying about where you got to travel to the next meeting. And I think in a way it's, you just see people doing stuff that they didn't maybe do before, whether it's going for a walk or doing stuff with their family projects. There's probably never been so much spring cleaning done in the world. You know, closets being gone through and freezers that haven't been touched for a while. So I think there's definitely kind of almost a reconnection. I think in a way we'll probably come out of this. And I was thinking about this earlier, that really we're kind of living life a lot like our parents did when they grew up. I mean, you know, going to town or going to church on a Sunday was kind of like a big excursion, right? And essentially they were at home with their families, working together, learning together. I guess they still went to school and stuff like that. But I think that in a lot of ways we're, you know, our whole world is going to reconnect with things that we kind of forgot about. And there's never been anything like this that has affected so many people all at once, worldwide. I don't think in our history, when you really think about that, that's kind of a pretty crazy thing.
Yeah, I would agree. And what's interesting is, you know, you can pick up on not so much the news, but just the conversations that are happening around the world, and we're actually all experiencing the same thing, as opposed to sometimes when you get like a drought or a flood or a fire or something like that, and it's just isolated to an area of the world. This is something that there's a map in front of me in my office here, and I'm looking where we're at, and then I'm looking at Australia in the corner, and the people in Australia are doing the same thing that we're doing. Yeah. And they're isolated. It's crazy when you actually think of that happening. But so yeah. Holden, you said something, you know, interesting. You said I forget the words actually already that you used, but it just felt like you were like cut off right away, right? And yeah. I think it's only been 3 weeks, I guess, yeah. For us, but it probably feels like a little bit longer. I'm interested. Do you feel, Holden, you know, in your world that this is actually getting to be a little bit more normal and you're getting more comfortable, or is it the other way for you right now? Is it getting more difficult? I'm just curious kind of how things have changed in your mind the last 3 weeks.
Well, yeah, I feel like it's getting easier because I'm getting used to like not seeing people, but I can still like talk to my friends, like if I'm playing video games or something, I can still like talk to them. So we're not completely cut off, but I don't really know.
What do you think, Holden, is some of the things that you've kind of actually enjoyed about the, you know, different situation or what you're doing? And then maybe on the same hand, what are some of the things that you think are been the most challenging, you know, being at home and hold up with all your siblings and family?
Well, I think the best part about it is like getting to sleep in and not having mom come at your door yelling at you to wake up at like 6:45 a.m. But then also the bad part is that mom doesn't wake you up and then you sleep until 9 o'clock and then you miss breakfast. So those are pretty much my only two things.
Well, I have
you
to,
like your
I,
sleep.
I have to give Lachelle a lot of credit. I mean, she kind of set up a daily schedule for the kids. And so for me, you know, my life really hasn't changed because the farm and all the stuff we're doing is essentially still rolling. My office is across the yard. So I get up in the morning, I walk across and I go to the office and go to work. And, you know, and Lachelle's been dealing with all the homeschooling, so to speak. And she totally hated school when she went to school, and now she's homeschooling everybody kind of thing, or helping with that. But she made a very simple schedule for the kids for, you know, home school time and creative time and kind of quiet time and all these different things. So that's been pretty cool. But I was laughing that she must be kind of going a bit stir crazy, or this must be affecting her a bit, because she's never been a reader. She's never read the whole time I've ever really known her, except the odd time once in a while. And like last weekend we came to the lake and she literally has got on this reading kick now where she read for 2 days straight, like every moment that she could. So I'm just thinking, like, you know, is she all right? Is she starting to go a little crazy or whatever? But so it's interesting to see, you know, some of the different habits that people are creating in a new environment and how your environment affects your behavior, right?
Totally. I had an interesting conversation the other day. I'm going to kind of steer the conversation here in one direction around food. With a person that understands the food and the health industry, and she said something to me that kind of caught me not off guard, but just in a really surprising way. She said, you know, what happened to home economics? And or home ec is how she said. And
yeah.
I don't know for you, Terry, but when someone says the words home ec, I think of like two classes in my, you know, K to 12 years that I took in a kitchen in the school, kind of burning cookies and pizza and sewing a little bit. But that's the home ec, right? Home economics. But it got me so curious when she said that. I said, I don't know what happened. I don't even know. And maybe Holden, you would be able to tell us if there's still home ec classes. But I had to do the research. I said, well, what is home economics? And I don't have it in front of me right now, but it was eight different categories, right? It's cooking, it's taking care of children, it's our family, it's finances, it's all the things that we're really being forced to elevate right now are in the category of home economics. And this isn't necessarily about taking us back 50 years to having to grind our own flour, but the reality is, I've never cooked as much. I love cooking, and I've never cooked as much as I have the last 3 weeks because every meal is cooked. We're not going out, right? And that's now I'm not sewing my clothes yet, but we're getting one reason I'm wearing a hat today is someone's going to have to figure out how to cut my hair. Maybe something in home economics. So I don't know. It was an interesting comment and a class that perhaps we thought was, you know, maybe not as relevant, but maybe will be more relevant moving forward. So
do you learn any of that stuff in school now, Holden?
Well, in home ec, I wish they would teach us about finances, but they don't. Now, like, you
now
know,
you're broke.
Like, yeah, because like you think of, I always think of like Serica and how she's like moved out of the house now, but she has like no idea what she's doing with her money really. Cause you had to teach her all of that. But like, I'm in grade 7 right now. I'm going to be in grade 8 next year. And home ec starts in grade 8, but it's only cooking. Like, gotcha. It's just cooking. And home ec at our school, it's just cooking and sewing. And then it's shop. And then, so
we
don't learn anything else.
That's interesting. That brings back a memory for me when I was going to school and we did have home ec. And the only thing I really remember about that is the teacher that we had, her nickname was Big Bird because she was like 6'4". And, you know, I guess we called her Big Bird. Her name was Shirley. And so in this one, home ec,
she might be listening.
yeah, she might be listening. I hope not. But she was one of those teachers like back in the day that, you know, if she went off the rails, like she went off the rails, like she'd be yelling and screaming or smashing rulers or whatever. Like, you know, she'd get incarcerated today probably. But anyways, we could cook this cake or something, and so I had put, there was one last piece on my plate, and I took the piece, I put it on my plate, and then I cut it in half, and then I gave it to my neighbor, my friend, to share it. But that was not the proper etiquette. I was supposed to cut it in the pan first, not put it onto my plate, because it's not sanitary. And I guess now I know why. Like, this is COVID-19 kind of thing, right? But anyway, she just came up and she totally cuffed me off the back of my head, like as hard as she could, pretty much, just about, like, you know. And that's, I remember that. And of course, you would never get away with that today in school. But it was kind of a funny story. So
Tell me about, you guys were just, as a family, you took a trip down to the grandparents' place in Arizona, and I think you had a chef come in and even teach some cooking. Tell me how that went, and I want to hear an honest story from both sides here and make sure the stories match up. So Holden, you're nodding your head and smiling. What was that experience like for you, cooking as a family?
Well, it was, the cooking was good and the meal was great, but I kid you not, the first minute that the guy came in, put down all the stuff, Dad had his camera out. Literally, like, full on filming the whole entire thing. And then he was trying to talk to him, but of course the guy's like freaked out because he's just holding a camera in his face, not wanting to talk to him. And same with Grandma. That's just our grandma. But it was good. He taught me how to cut onions a certain way that I don't chop off my fingers. And then that's all I did. I just cut onions.
What did you make? What was the goal of the class?
What
were you making? Yeah.
I don't know. I can't remember what it was. Fajitas. Yeah. We made like guacamole and like different types of sauces, and then we had meat and fajitas. Yeah.
So Terry, other than your need to turn this into a blockbuster film, maybe you're looking for some bloopers, but what was it like for you to have 10 people or more in your family sitting around chopping and cooking? What was that like?
Yeah, it was pretty cool. My story might be slightly different than Holden's, because I don't think I was quite the paparazzi that Holden described, but it was really cool. And I guess what we were thinking about is, you know, now with the larger family and stuff, Lachelle does, you know, the majority of the cooking, and I don't mind cooking, but I honestly don't really know how to cook a lot of things. So things that I, you know, how to cook, which really isn't cooking, like eggs and breakfast and steak and stuff, whatever, it's all good. So the younger kids, like Ryder and Haley, really like actually helping out, and they'll cook macaroni or different things. And so I just thought, you know, and Holden's been kind of learning some stuff too. So I thought, you know, this would be really cool if we could learn how to do more stuff as a family, and maybe it's something that we could do as a family. And so I got looking at different options and classes and stuff, and then realized I kind of wanted to do something that included even Octavia at 2 years old and stuff. And so then found you could, I think it was on lessons.com or stuff, something I searched, and you could identify different chefs that would come right into the home. So that's kind of what we set up. So it was actually really cool, because this guy, I told him kind of what everybody liked and what we'd maybe want to learn together. And he came, he brought all the food, he brought all the tools, he had the recipes, he broke us all up into different groups. So each person kind of did a different thing, and it was really a lot of fun. We involved the whole family, and yeah, it was pretty cool. It was a pretty cool experience. One of the ones that I've, you know, enjoyed the most, just kind of as a whole family, because everyone was involved. So it was pretty cool. I think we'd definitely look at doing something like that again.
Yeah. We had we've never had that. I've always actually wanted to have someone come in and either cater a meal in the home or teach. And then we'll get there. But we tried something new in our family for the first time ever. I think you guys tried this too, but we actually had a HelloFresh subscription for, I think like 5 meals or something. There was a promo Rebecca found on one of her friends on Instagram. And so we got the promo and thought, we'd try this out, right? Normally those things, when I first see them, I think like high-priced food, like high-priced ingredients, you know, not that big of portions, and what's this is going to be like. So I probably had a misconception in my mind, but this box came, this cardboard box with insulation, and it was on our doorstep, and we opened it up, and everything was in a bag, and there was a recipe in every bag, and the ingredients in every bag, and an expiry date, so you must cook this by Thursday kind of thing. Like I said at the start, I really enjoy cooking, but I don't actually usually follow directions. I have learned just to find the flavors myself. But Rebecca's, she loves to bake and she's a great baker, which requires more precision and following the recipes. So I think for her, this was like chicken, you know, cordon bleu type with the ingredients like all laid out. It was just beautiful and it was really good. And for a family of six, we had, you know, definitely enough for one, if not one and a half to two meals. So the value overall was definitely high. Now we had a bit of a discount, but it's something that for sure we're going to look into because I think as a family, you get kind of stale in your tastes and your repetitiveness. And we cook a lot of craft dinner and a lot of grilled cheese and those sorts of things. And even the suppers, you can only have tacos, you know, at least four times a week. So I think, but in all seriousness, it was a nice way to break up the routine. So I think that's another thing that probably, you know, especially coming from a rural background, agriculture background, maybe there's this resistance to these ideas that you should have everything come to your door and be in that way, as opposed to just going to the store and getting creative. But I don't think there's anything wrong with it. Firstly, I saw a lot of advantage and a lot less waste for us too, because all the ingredients you needed were there. So anyway, that was kind of, it wasn't a chef at home, but kind of a chef come in a box coming to the chef at home experience. Pretty awesome.
Yeah, we've been, Lachelle's been doing that too. And I was really surprised at how simple it is, how good the meals are. And there's more packaging and stuff, but like you say, there's no waste because you basically have exactly what you need. And yeah, Holden, yeah, you've been making a lot of those. What do you think of that whole deal?
I think they're really good because it's super easy to make. And with the instructions, like say you got something, say you got like a bag with food in it, but they forgot to put the instructions in. You can just look up what the meal is online and then you can just do that. Yep. Or you can buy all the ingredients and then search up a recipe with those ingredients and then make something. So I think it's really cool.
Well, that's the other thing that's cool about it too. Some of the meals that you like the most, I mean, you can still go, you could go out and make that own meal yourself if you wanted to, but I definitely think the simplicity of those things are, you know, I think even what we're going through right now is going to change some of those habits. You know, there's probably a lot of people, you know, losing a bit of weight right now too, because they're, you know, not picking up fast food or eating out all the time or different things like that too, right? I've been reading now that some of the people are making bread, a lot more bread, or looking for flour, and partly because people have time now at home, right? So they can still go to the grocery store and buy, you know, the jumbo pack of macaroni. That's really easy and the kids all love. We all grew up on that stuff. But, you know, now maybe people have a little bit more time and it's something, again, that you can now do with your family, bake some bread, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting what you said, because you said, you know, we could go and get the ingredients and make those things, but here's, but we won't. So we won't. So I have, since I got those beautiful recipes from HelloFresh, I have yet to make them again. And I also have a cupboard full of cookbooks with probably better recipes than half those ones, but I don't go out and do that. So so think about that for a minute. Why is that? Is it because I'm lazy and I don't want to go out? No, that's not it. Is it because it's hard to find all the ingredients in the recipe books in the store? Probably not. But it's just this convenience that we're paying for and not so much the experience, but just the, honestly, the convenience and the fact that it shows up on your doorstep. So in our current situation, I don't know what your family's like, but we're trying to limit our, so I'm the only one going out of the house to get groceries, and I'm trying to do that once every 2 weeks. So I'm actually cutting back on some of the fresh stuff that won't last 2 weeks. And, you know, we offset some of that with frozen food, but fruit will last a couple of weeks. But just think if that became the requirement in the future, if I just chose, I'm like, you know what, I've saved a whole bunch of gas by only going out once every 2 weeks. But if the food could come to me, or if I could, you know, in your case, living on a farm, if you could go to the greenhouse if you had a greenhouse and you know, chop your tomato off the vine and grab your cucumber. I don't know. These are the things that, you know, maybe that's a far out there goal or vision for how our future could look, but it also might serve us the future of kind of locavorism as it seems to be trending. So
we hope that you are enjoying this episode of the Growing the Future podcast. Please take the time to visit our sponsor, Eberhardt Ag Solutions, at eberhardtagsolutions.ca, where you can find innovative solutions that transform your farm. And now, back to the show.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting topic. I mean, I've been thinking a lot about this as just as we, you know, maybe look to have a healthier lifestyle, and learn to do some of these things and make it easier. But like you say, I mean, I think it's a bit of a reflection of our society. We just don't have time. There's social media, there's devices, there's other things that have filled their lives. Whereas before, I mean, whether it was the homemaker, whoever it was, that was their job or role back in the day. They just to make food for the family, right? That was an all day kind of event or planning around that. But now we've got all this other stuff. And so I think I've been thinking a lot about things like HelloFresh or just how do we create, you know, systems that can get you the food that you want when you want it. If we had some kind of a system like HelloFresh, but it was grown in your greenhouse and it had all those, so you get the recipe up and you just go and pick the stuff that you need fresh, and maybe some comes in the mail or you pick it up at the grocery store, that you're not going to grow in bulk, like your flour, things like that. Right. It's interesting because I think it needs to be easy, and people, you know, we're a reflection of our environment, and it's going to be so interesting now to see some of these things. I've been reading a book, it's called like Willpower Doesn't Exist. Right. And it's basically, the concept is that we all as humans have a very limited amount of willpower, and it only lasts so long. It gets worn out really quickly. And so it's really more about your environment that creates these opportunities, you know, and some of the heroes in the world are people who did amazing things. They just didn't, you know, Abraham Lincoln just wasn't born and was destined to be who he was. It was a lot of, obviously he was a smart guy, but, and did a lot of good things, but it was also a big reflection of the environment and the situations that he was put in that allowed him to have the opportunities to, you know, so it's those kind of concepts. It's really interesting. It's the same thing with food, right? An environment that you're surrounded in.
Yeah, exactly.
You got no, you know, chocolate bunnies and stuff like that. I already got in trouble before the podcast for eating a chocolate bunny, but I'm like, well, it's on the counter. Like, you can't leave it there. And if I see it, I'm going to want to eat it. Like, I don't have the willpower to resist that. Come on.
Exactly. Yeah. It's exciting. I think the future of food, and how this could look. And I feel privileged to be part of the food industry, working with farmers. And one question I actually had for Holden was, you know, if this ever has resonated with him, like maybe first, Terry, a question to you, what are all the crops that you have grown on your farm the last 5 years, just to keep it there? Like just list them all quick, the crops that you grow.
Probably. So malt barley, wheat, rye, canola, peas, fava beans, hemp, some intercrops. We just tried last year, flax. Probably that would probably cover them.
So you've got 9 crops you just listed that you're growing. And here's what I was reflecting on is, most of those crops are not grown fresh for the market. So Holden doesn't go to the grocery store and buy a bag of wheat or a bag of flax. Like, you could, but you really don't, right? Those are often the ingredients in what you're eating, right? So I think you understand that. Yet the brands that are supporting the production of these foods, like Kellogg's and General Mills and these, like, they count on your farm and farms like your farm to make, you know, food for the world. And I, you know, I think if we look ahead at what we've seen in the fresh produce industry, there's this desire to feel a little bit closer to your food and closer to that. Because you might want to know that, you know, Driscoll's raspberry, you might want Driscoll's strawberries. You might not want those other strawberries. You might want this lettuce because it tastes better. And what I'm curious to know, Holden, is if in your perspective of being raised on the farm and being part of the farm and harvesting and seeding and all those operations and those 9 crops that Terry just listed, do you appreciate the fact that you're a food producer at the age you're at, or is it not quite there yet? How does that make you feel as a food producer?
I feel like I have a really important role in the world because I hope to, like, take over the farm one day to, like, help feed the world. Yep. And, like, be a food producer, like you said.
I'm just wondering, here's maybe more even of a challenge, is start looking at the ingredients of the food that you're eating. And I think on every label, you'll probably find one of those 9 crops that Terry just listed. And I think we don't do that often enough in broadacre farming.
What?
We just kind of
cut out
that important part of the label. And I personally, I don't know what you think, Terry, but I see it as a bit of a gap, right? And I think that gap has been closed in the fresh produce industry and the fruits and veggies and specialty crops, but in the broadacre crops like you're growing, I think we could appreciate and celebrate a little bit more the fact that it's pretty darn important to have wheat and oats and flax and barley. So I don't know what you think, but.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's generally a pretty big disconnect there with consumers, and you know, we see and hear a lot of that stuff. And I think there needs to be, and we've talked about this a lot, you and I, it's not only just the food part of the story, but connecting to health and these kind of things. And I think there's two sides of it, or more than one side. But, you know, what I see is, you know, just personally from, you know, wanting to maybe eat healthier and not only for yourself, but I think a lot about now that we've got another kind of round of parenting, so to speak, you think about these things a little bit more, because the first time you're just kind of surviving and you really don't know what you're doing in a sense, or that's the way it kind of felt for me. But you want to teach your kids healthy habits too. And just kind of made me think of a funny story when you were talking, because I've been looking, you know, realizing how much sugar is in everything and how that's just one of the things that's crazy in our American diet. It's just insane, all the processed foods. And so, you know, I'm always looking at how much sugar is even in yogurt and stuff, right? It's, and then the other morning I saw Ryder and Haley were at the breakfast table and they're both looking at the cereal boxes and they're like, well, this one has like 15 grams of sugar. And like, how much does yours have? And I just thought it was so cool that, I mean, obviously, you know, they probably see me looking at stuff or whatever, talking about it. And here they are, like they're comparing their cereals and how much sugar and they have a bit of maybe knowledge that, hey, less sugar is better, right? For you. But there's such a disconnect, even just in diets. And I think there's parts of the food industry that have also aggressively, you know, marketed themselves for their own, whether it's sugar and those processed foods that aren't necessarily healthy for us. So there's a big disconnect between food and health, and you know, ties into the performance thing. And so I think somehow we need to, you know, look at these things. I've been reading more about longevity and those kind of things. I'm really interested in that. And so there's a huge disconnect between the type of food and diets and things that you should eat that help keep you healthy and help keep you living longer, and what we're producing. So there's a lot of confusion there, even for people that are pretty well educated, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I agree. And I think those, you know, the kids looking at that age, looking at labels on on food is that's amazing. I should teach my kids to read the sugar content as they eat their Captain Crunch. But I think, you're definitely onto something, Terry. There's this connection between our industry in our core industry in agriculture and the food and the health industry that's still not quite synchronized as it could be. And in some ways we're actually working away from each other. Like because of this polarizing view that maybe the production practices that we have today are for whatever reason, producing unhealthy food, which is not the case. We know that's not the case. It's creating this divide. So it definitely can be studied further. And I think, if you peel back the marketing of it, it could definitely kind of resurge as an opportunity for agriculture and food and health to be working a lot closer together on that. Here's one that I see has already started that I would love to actually even help get ahead of, and that's the plant-based proteins industry. So, I think when you first started seeing those burgers and stuff come into the restaurants, most of the reaction was, well, whoa, 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 what? I don't want this. I don't want this plant-based impossible meat, whatever it was. I want beef. but the ingredients for that plant-based burger, you've grown on your farm, and you are growing on your farm, and lots of farms are growing them, and it's a source of income and a source of opportunity. And if you could grow them better, and you could even, maybe they don't taste that great today, but that's short-sighted. What if we could make a plant-based burger taste just fantastic? I don't think it, for me, if it tastes great, I'll eat it. And providing it's got that health, benefit into it. And I think, protein is protein. And no matter what source you get it from, as long as you're getting the right protein you need and you enjoy the taste of it, so you're getting it. And it's going to, that whole trend and the opportunity there is, I think, big for definitely Western Canadian agriculture as well, because we're one of the largest pulse producing countries in the world. So
I have a question. Every time I go into an A&W or something, and on the menu they say they have the Beyond Meat burger, do they have because it's made out of plant protein, so do they just have plants sitting in the back waiting to be taken, their protein to be taken, or do they just have bags of plant protein? Or do they just pre-cook them? Because I don't want to eat a plant burger that's been sitting there for a week waiting for somebody to order it.
Well, what an honest, awesome question, because I'll answer the question holding to my knowledge, but the unfortunate thing is when you go into A&W, you're getting not the marketing of how they're producing the burgers and ingredients and what they're made of, but you're getting the marketing of basically misinformation and why the things that they're not using, like antibiotics, and they're not using, you're getting that message, which is really unfortunate. It truly is. So just think about, a company that would lead with a message of we have a plant-based burger and let me explain to you how we make it. And let me explain to you these soybeans that are grown in Canada and the US. And let me explain to you that soybean can have protein in it, as can beef, right? Let's talk about proteins for a minute. You're not at that grade yet in school, but you'll learn about proteins and how proteins are synthesized. So, I think reality is those ingredients that are in those plant-based proteins are some of the same raw ingredients we use in pretty much all our other foods. There's some work to do, but there's not a bag of plant protein in the back that's, getting mixed up. but just like anything, a lot of these proteins are made offsite and they're frozen and sent to the restaurant, and then they unthaw them and cook them up for you. But, what's cool about that question is it's got me thinking a little bit more about what's inside those burgers, and even maybe I could make a plant-based burger at home now. This is my inner chef coming out. I'm going to see if I can create one here. I can make really good other burgers, but.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting discussion. I mean, it's also a pretty sensitive discussion depending on what your viewpoint is or what side of the fence you're on, so to speak. But I agree. I mean, I think there's a place for all these things. I think it's much similar to the organic versus conventional debate. I think the more choices, the more options, the better. As the thing that I have concern or issue with is when there's misinformation used, or fear to sell a product instead of focusing on why you would buy that product. Don't focus on why you wouldn't buy another product, so you should buy this one, right? And that's some of the things that I think that's where people get really confused and frustrated or upset, and then we wonder why the consumer is confused, because we're fighting amongst each other and throwing mud and those kind of things. But I think food's going to change a lot, and you know, it's interesting because I think sometimes for me, in some ways, most days, I'd be happy just to get, you know, if I could drink like Star Wars type thing, you know, here's a little shake that you drink and it has all the things that you need to be healthy. But then you might miss, at times you could still have that really nice meal that's all laid out and done really well and enjoy the foodie part of food and that whole experience. But a lot of times, like during the week, you know, I'd be fine if I could just drink this shake or whatever it is that just had all the stuff that I need. And the reality is it's probably not that far away with these plant proteins and things like that, where who knows, you'll have an app on your phone that tracks all your fitness and your movements and your weight and all this stuff and knows your blood type or whatever. And it just, you go to some smoothie machine in your house and it puts everything that you need in a jug or a cup. And
this is reminding me of a story I heard from Peter Diamandis actually at Singularity. I was fortunate to be down there for a week in their executive program, and there was so now we're going to start talking tech, but Peter's like the epitome of tech. Like, he just loves this stuff, and a lot of us do. I love it as well, but not near as much as he does. So he has essentially built up in his household a system very similar to what you described, Terry, where through, you know, the combination of wearables that he has, plus some instant kind of blood testing and things like that he can do. At the end of the day, every day, he will sit down and get his test results back and look at his apps, and it will tell him what he missed during the course of the day in his diet. And then that all those missing pieces and those ratios and those grams and milligrams and stuff will go to a dispenser, and that dispenser will produce a supplement with what he needs to be up to basically the level of what, you know, they believe and science believes would be, you know, perfect human health. So it's not a lot different, and it's here, it's happening, right? And people like Peter are testing this out as part of their human longevity project, and the company's there. It's about, you know, what you eat, but it's also about balancing that or supplementing that with the missing things that you can't maybe get from food. So yeah, every day he gets this pill that basically pushes in the missing ingredients and then starts the day over. I won't ever forget that story. I have no idea what the costs are, how you would do, or what all those what the pills are made of. But I think as a balanced diet, that's also harder and harder for us to keep track of. I just found an app, back to tech here, called, I was just looking it up, it's called BiteSnap. It's not an endorsement. I don't know if this is the best app or the only app, but I was looking for an app that I could take a picture of the plate of my food, and it would tell me what was on it and what was in it. And so far, BiteSnap has done that. So check it out tonight. Like, I'll put it in front of my apple and we'll say, this is an apple, this is a banana, just by taking a picture. So we do these things with recognition technology already, and they're doing it in food, but they're taking it a step further and they're tying in the health side of what's in that food and then you know, connecting that into your fitness and everything. So it's pretty cool.
That's really cool. I mean, I was just thinking as well about eventually someone's going to come up with something like that. I mean, you have your Fitbit app or whatever it may be, and if you're going to log your food or whatever, it's pretty painful. And seeing like somebody's got to come up with something, you can just scan your plate and it would fill everything in, right? And so that's really cool. I mean, I think all these things are changing so fast. So that kind of leads me into something I wanted to ask you about too, is just kind of getting into this whole area of mindset, abundance, you know, what's your big purpose in the world and things like that. And I know you had the opportunity to go to Singularity University, which is an extension of what Peter Diamandis is doing. And yeah, I just kind of wanted to get a few quick thoughts on, you know, what inspired you to go and what your experience was at Singularity University, and just kind of how that affected your thinking and how you look at kind of what you're doing.
Yeah. How much time do we have? the opportunity happened about 2 years ago, and the short story is that I was accepted into their executive program, which is the immersive week of essentially exponential technology topics in a setting of about 100 people from around the world in all different segments of business and industry. It was in Mountain View, California, so kind of in the heart of a lot of innovation and such. I was immersed. I really disconnected from my normal personal life and my business life and said, I'm committing to this. And every day you had the opportunity to hear from some of the most amazing minds and some of the most amazing stories and things in the world. So, you know, the one story I just told about Peter and what he was doing in his personal life with his health was one. I was inspired by topics around 3D printing and 3D printing foods even. That was very interesting to me to think about having a printer in your home that is printing food. crazy, right? So, of course, they're printing tools and they're printing things that are being used around the world already. And we're seeing that today with COVID. I was on a bit of a side story, but on a call with a colleague of mine, Doug McKay, and he showed me, it turned his screen and showed me he was 3D printing mask clips for masks in his home. And then there was a whole place he could take them and they were getting used. So anyway, 3D printing, you know, topics like that were coming up. And this was 2 years ago and it wasn't really affordable for a lot of these things. But, you know, I left there changed, Terry. I did. I truly did. I left there. I've always been, I felt an opportunistic, but I left there thinking that, you know, the future is definitely going to be awesome and fantastic. A lot of the challenges that we are experiencing today will be overcome. I left there with an appreciation. I was the only one out of a cohort of about 100 people that was actually connected in the agriculture industry. So I was, you know, sitting at tables with people from the fashion industry and people from the transportation business and energy and you name it. It was great. But that was one of the also learnings for me, was to actually force myself outside of agriculture more often and attend more conferences and more meetings, because no offense to the people that are probably listening to this podcast, but when all we do is hang out with each other, we don't get as much new ideas. So yeah, for me, the hairy, audacious goals and the big goals, you know, I don't have it. It's a blank piece of paper in front of me today. But honestly, I'm driven towards a lot of what we've talked about on this podcast today. I'm driven towards closing a gap between agriculture and food, and between food and health, and ultimately between agriculture and health. I think those industries are so interconnected that we could do a better job at connecting those with, maybe it's technology, maybe it's conversation, maybe it's events. You know, I think those three for me, the world is always going to need to eat. And, you know, we've heard the projections on what we have to grow by 2050. I'm not here to repeat that. But I actually don't believe we do have to grow that much more by 2050. I think we've got to grow and distribute more evenly our capabilities here. So yeah, that's probably the most elusive way of me saying I've got goals to be more connected with food and more connected with health than I have been. I've always been connected to farming and I always will be. But I'm starting to appreciate the 9 crops that you grow, Terry. I'm starting to appreciate how important those are for what I eat and what I put on the plates of my family. And I think that's probably something that I overlooked before. So
yeah,
what about
really
you?
Cool.
Tell me.
I think that's really cool. I mean, that, you know, immersing yourself in that Singularity University is an incredible example of putting yourself in a different environment, right? Yep. With a different set of rules and thoughts and all those things, and it changed your perspective, right? And I think that's one of the things that I love about going to strategic coach, the same thing. I think while I love agriculture, I love the people in agriculture, I also do find at times that we kind of live in this little bubble and we get really frustrated that, yeah, you know, everyone outside our bubble doesn't understand us. But how often are we really engaging with people outside of agriculture that don't understand anything about it? So, you know, I think for me, one of the things that's become clear, and it took me a long time to kind of figure this out, it was just kind of always there in underlying things. But for me, it really comes back to kind of the tagline for the farm, that growing our future, and the kind of idea behind this podcast as well, is just, I want to do things that help make it better for the next generations and more sustainable. I know that word is kind of overused and abused, but I just look at, as long as we're doing things better than we were yesterday, and yep, sharing that knowledge, learning together, helping us all move forward and grow the pie bigger. So for me, that's about, I think we have the opportunity to influence things more than just within our own community or our own industry. I think the world is going to change dramatically. It will be so interesting to look back at today, what's going on today. I think this event is going to be something that will be go down in history, but also moving forward, I think that through technology and things are going to change dramatically, whether it's vertical farming or the protein or things like that. So even in 10 or 15 years from now, I think we're going to come back around where the use of technology and science and information is going to become more abundant. And I think, I feel like it's going to tie things back together again a bit more. You know, really, when you think about this idea of connecting health and connecting all these things through the industrialization of our world and expanding that way, we really kind of got away from that. Because back in the day, whether, you know, you were living in a band of Indians, right? You had your medicine doctor and you used the yep, food that was around and the plants for healing. And you really were in touch with food and what you needed for health and those kind of things. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. But I was also on the same lines going to ask Cold, and, you know, thinking about all these things. And if you eventually want to become a farmer and what the world's going to look like then, what do you feel that the most important thing for you to do will be, or what's your, you know, biggest goal or passion that you may have right now for the future?
Well, my biggest goal for the future would probably be to like expand the farm, to do like more things and like just help out like the world more, like all farms, try and like just push everybody to do more to help.
Yep.
The need.
I think that's awesome. And you know, if you're growing 9 crops today, and you know, in 10 years from now, it's probably not unreasonable to think you could be growing 20 different types of food on your farm. And that, you know, the more food you're growing, the more families you're helping. And you're also, you know, your farm's always been kind of at that leading edge. And so that learning that you're going through will, through just education and information, to teach other farms around the world to do what you're doing. So you'll probably go through some learnings like I know Terry and I went through in, you know, 15 years ago on our farms, and trying to get certain land to do certain things that it just couldn't, and adjusting that way. But just think, Terry, about what the learning that Holden gets to do on that same land, trying to grow new crops. Or maybe he's not, maybe he's putting a building on that land with some lights in it and doing something there that he's learning about. So that's pretty awesome for me to hear, and even just to look forward to and watch from afar. So
yeah, it's going to be interesting. Earlier today, I'm going through all these old hard drives, trying to, you know, consolidate our pictures and photos, and also all of our data, old, you know, application data and stuff like this. And it's interesting. I think so far I've found stuff back to 2004, 2006, and even just looking at spreadsheets for the crop plan way back then. And it seems like a long time ago, but wasn't that long ago. It's incredible how much things change, especially with technology. And so it's hard to even fathom the type of things that, you know, Holden will be dealing with if he does take over the farm. But it's pretty cool either way. And I think there's a lot of opportunity out there, and it's really just how you want to look at it. You can look at all these things as challenges. You can look at what we're going through today in the world as a huge challenge, and there's no doubt it is. But it's also incredible to see the innovation, the resiliency, and what we're going to learn. And it'll be really interesting to see how this affects all of us, but especially the younger generations, probably anyone under 50 or under 40 years old, because we've never lived through any challenge in North America, theoretically. I don't remember living through a war or a drought, or, you know, or really, really, I mean, I guess there was a 2008 depression, or, you know, crash and those kind of things. But really, I mean, it affected life, but not the way this is, and not on this kind of scale. Right. So I just think that'll really change how people look at things. I was talking with our neighbors at the lake here of a week or so ago, and they were in quarantine from coming back from the US, and we were kind of talking across the fence. I was joking. It was like the tool time, you know, the old tool time talking across the fence there, if you're old enough to remember that. But you know, they were talking about, at one point they just kind of commented, it's like, well, maybe, you know, maybe this isn't such a bad thing, because it'll help bring a bit of a dose of reality to all the young people there that have never experienced anything like this before. Right. And they've lived through stuff like that. Right. And the wars. And so it'll be, I think it's going to force people to reconnect with reality. I think we all were getting a long ways away from the reality of the world, and food and finance and security and all of these things. And so I think it's already, you see the kind of conversations, you see things that are happening, and it is affecting agriculture. I mean, I think we're lucky to be in agriculture, and people are really going to rely on this time. But one of the things that's already happening, for instance, is hearing like malt barley prices for new crop are really going down, because hey, people are probably still drinking at home a lot. But with all the bars, all the restaurants, all those things shut down, all the sporting events, the demand for beer overall is just gone way down. Right. And will be for the next few months.
Yeah.
Or a year.
Yeah. 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 No, I think there's impacts that we haven't yet started to measure that will start to become more obvious. And And that, you know, you're right, Terry. I've also felt like this is, I consider myself in the younger generation still. This is a wake-up call. It truly is, but a good one, and a good thing that, you know, at least that's the mindset that I have within the current situation. I'm blessed with my health, I'm blessed with my family, I'm blessed with, you know, the resources to provide. And so I think with that, it has a, you know, we probably just got too busy and we didn't have the time to consider these things that, are a part of home economics and the eight things. And so check out the eight things of home economics, but that's where I'm at. And this conversation has been awesome for me today to think what we've covered and talked about, and holding your perspective as well has been great. You know, the fact that you're seeing what you're seeing and living through what you're doing, but also doing so well about it and seeing the future is full of opportunity for, you know, for feeding and giving back. So congrats to both of you on that. So,
well, the thing is, if this, something like this happened 15, 20 years ago, you would feel even more disconnected, because this technology that we're using right now didn't exist. You can play Fortnite with your buddies and chat with them or video call. And it's interesting to see how people are connecting. But the other thing I think that's been huge is this, I think people underestimated, or we all maybe took for granted how important that human interaction is. And again, I think it's forced all of us to really think about the relationships and those kind of things. I was talking with friend the other day about this, is for the most part, I think for us, it's been really good. It's kind of reconnected, and it forces you also to work through some challenges with the people that, you know, if you have that in your relationships, and hopefully that makes it stronger. But there's also people out there that are living in challenging relationships or abusive relationships, and now they really have nowhere to go. And you know, so some of those things are a little bit scary to think about too, but we're lucky to kind of be where we're at and have the family that we have around us. Cause it's one of the things I've always said, with our family, is at the end of the day, no matter what happens, you know, you'll have your family. And this is kind of that example where, if we're all doing our part in quarantine and stuff, we're with our families and that's it, right?
Yeah, totally.
But that's super cool. I think kind of reached the end of the road of the conversation for today. So it was a little different than we normally chat about, but we're also living in a little different times, but excited to see what happens as we move forward. Thanks for taking the time, Warren, today. Thanks, Holden. And
thanks, Terry.
It'll be really interesting to see what kind of world we have in another year or so from now. It'll be interesting to see, will we all go back to the same habits that we had before and the same trends? Or I think it's going to be, there's definitely going to be a few things that are a little different, or we think about a little bit harder if that activity or the money we were spending on or those trips that we traveled on, if they really were providing you as much value as you thought, or if you're tending to enjoy some of the simpler things in life a little more. So
thanks so much, Terry, Holden. You guys have a great Easter weekend together. I know we're going to have it here. We're going to have way too much ham because there's not as many people eating it, but ham for weeks, yeah. So take care. Thanks so much.
Yeah, you too. Thanks a lot, guys. Till the next time.
Thanks for listening to the Growing the Future podcast. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook for highlights of the show. Also, full-length videos of the show are available on our website, www.growingthefuturepodcast.ca, and on YouTube. We would very much appreciate if you took the time to visit our sponsor, Eberhardt Ag Solutions, at eberhardtagsolutions.ca. where you can find innovative solutions that transform your farm.